from KQED.
And our coverage of tonight's debate continues now, and we begin with our Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers, who is at Dominican University in San Rafael for tonight's debate, and he joins us from the Media Center there. John, good evening.
Good evening, Scott.
Well, first of all, obvious question, what's your impression of the debate, what we heard for the last 60 minutes?
Well, it was interesting, and I think it was different, which, you know, this debate made a debate. This is the third one. We didn't want to hear, frankly, you know, some of the things that we'd already talked about here. You know, my two cents, I think this was probably Meg Whitman's best debate. She seemed more comfortable up there. I don't know that anyone will declare her the winner here, though, because I think Brown got some very good points in as well. And we got some new topics on the table as well, specifically things about the budget, things about you know, some of the climate change issues that have been touched on a little bit, but not as much as it was this time. So an interesting debate, but, you know, the pundits are going to weigh in here. And I think ultimately the voters are the only ones who can choose.
And, you know, going into this race, the polls showed Jerry Brown opening up maybe a small lead. Did you hear anything or see anything tonight that could change that?
Tough to say. I mean, I think that, you know, the Brown campaign was confident coming into this. I talked to some of the campaign staff. They feel good about where the candidate's been. I think the weeks dust up of these stories about this audio tape and all of those things, they don't think it's big of a deal. You heard that come up in the debate tonight. You know, some people will probably say Whitman probably got the jump on that, and Brown gave a little bit of a lawyerly defense about the whole thing. But I think one of the greatest challenges here now will be how you finish the race. And we're just hearing tonight that Meg Whitman just put another $20 million of her own money into her campaign, which raises her spending that much more. You're going to see a lot more TV ads in the last 3 weeks.
We're going to be talking more about the debate, John, for the next half hour. But I just wonder if you've had a sense there tonight at the university that either of these candidates made a particular appeal to the undecided voters. The polls show there's still a good 10 to 15, maybe even more percent of voters who haven't made up their minds. Did they hear anything tonight from either of these candidates that you think was directed at them?
Probably so. I mean, you know, think about it, Scott. If you think about what an independent voter is, and we have to be careful trying to define them because, as you and I both know, we've talked to them in the past, they run the gamut of what their issues are and what they care about. But I think most often independent voters talk about they want common sense. They want to avoid the partisan politics. They want someone, you know, who will do what's right and lead. And I think you heard both candidates talk a lot about trying to change the culture of what happens in the State House in Sacramento and in state government. I know they have very different ways they want to get there. Whitman thinks it is an outsider, and Brown thinks it's his experience. But I do think that you kept hearing that time and again in a lot of this. And you're right. Those voters are crucial. You know, they're 20% of the electorate at this point.
When you say that you thought this was Meg Whitman's strongest performance of the three debates, what makes you say that?
She seemed more comfortable. I think in the first debate at UC Davis back 2 weeks ago, she seemed a little bit nervous at the top, and I think, you know, a lot of people really tune in to the top of these debates to see what happens. I think in the debate in Fresno, it was a tough crowd for her. She had just come off all the issues about her ex-housekeeper, and that was a strongly Latino audience, and I think that she did not tell them things that they wanted to hear. And I think she seemed a little more confident in this one. And I think, again, going back to the audio tape thing, which is only a very small issue, but Brown seemed a little tight on that. He seemed a little tense, and I think that, you know, as a result, you know, some people are going to see that soundbite over and over on television news and think that maybe Whitman got the best of that. But again, I think it was a very close race, a very close debate, I should say, and a lot of campaigning left to do 3 weeks to go.
All right, John Myers, our Sacramento Bureau Chief, reporting tonight from Dominican University in San Rafael. And John, I know you need to head into the spin zone to talk to the candidates, perhaps. So I'll let you go. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And joining us now from Sacramento is Dan Schnur. He's chairman of the Fair Political Practices Commission and director of USC's Jess Unruh Institute of Politics. Dan Schnur, good evening to you.
Scott, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. So what were your impressions? What did each of these candidates accomplish tonight, if anything?
I think what struck me more than anything else, Scott, is that both candidates and both campaigns seem to be pretty confident in their strategies. Pretty much throughout the campaign, although there are issue differences, I'd suggest to you that the differences in terms of public policy between the candidate have received much less attention and much less emphasis than the difference in their respective biographies. Jerry Brown is a lifetime public servant. Meg Whitman's career is a private sector jobs creator. And what was emphasized tonight by both candidates over and over are their respective biographies. They both appear to think that that's the key to victory for them.
And, you know, we're in an interesting moment here in our political life because people are very upset with Wall Street, but at the same time, they're upset with incumbents. And Jerry Brown, although he's not the governor, has been in politics for most of the last 40 years. So how do voters, when they see these two things they don't like, a longtime career politician versus someone who's affiliated with Wall Street in some ways, how do they weigh those two things?
Well, it is a tricky line to walk because, as you correctly pointed out, Scott, voters are angry at Washington and at career politicians, and they're angry at Wall Street and wealthy CEOs. And what you see Brown and Whitman do in their biographical presentations is actually a little bit more nuanced than I just made it sound a moment ago. Brown is running as a lifetime public servant, but he goes out of his way to talk about how he's a different kind of politician. Whitman talks about her credentials as a job creator, but if you've seen her most recent ads, and I suspect most of your listeners have, she goes out of her way to say that government should not be run like a business. So they realize that they've each got a biographical strength, but they've got to be careful not to overplay it.
And that outsider status that that she tries to play up, does that work, do you think, given that we currently have a governor who was an outsider and is at very low approval ratings right now?
I'm not sure either one of them is entirely credible as an outsider, given the discussion we've been having for the last moment. But I guess one other point that I would make to you and your listener, Scott, before we move on, is that it's worth noting that a relatively small percentage of voters will have watched or listened to this debate in its entirety the way your listening audience has. So for most Californians, what they learn about this debate will be on television or radio news, on the internet, or in the morning newspaper. And toward that end, I'm not sure either candidate created enough of a news headline to truly be declared the winner of the debate. So we're not entirely clear where the campaign was heading into the debate. Most polls show Brown with a lead, albeit a small one. My gut instinct tells me that except for that relatively small percentage of people who did spend 60 minutes with the candidates tonight, not much changed.
Dan, I know that you need to leave soon, and I'm going to let you just tell me when you need to go because I know I'm little, and I think you have maybe another minute or two you can stay with us. But
yes.
What do you see anything coming out of this? You know, sometimes something happens in a debate where there's a stumble, a mistake, or a strategic move that one or the other candidates make, and then they use it the next day and the days after. Do you see anything like that coming out of this debate tonight?
You know, I don't. As I mentioned a moment ago, it seemed to me like both candidates and both campaigns are very confident with their respective messages. So most of what you heard tonight were the candidates re-emphasizing the aspects of their biography we've heard about quite a bit in the past. If there's anything that the campaigns are going to be pushing tomorrow, it's probably their opponent's soundbites. And if I had to guess, and it is just a guess, as John Myers mentioned, the Whitman campaign might try to make something out of how quickly Brown tried to dismiss the flap over the phone message his campaign left with the Police Protective League. And I suspect the Brown campaign might try to make the same type of case about Ms. Whitman and her experience with her housekeeper. But I give Tom Brokaw credit because while he asked both candidates about those two episodes, he didn't dwell on them. He asked one question each and then he moved on. So for that reason alone, it was a much more policy-focused debate than we'd seen in either of the previous two exchanges.
All right, Dan, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Dan Schnur, chairman of the Fair Political Practices Commission and an old hand in California politics as well. He's director of the USC Jess Unruh Institute of Politics in Southern California. Dan, thanks again.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
You bet. And joining us now, three other voices. I'm joined here in the studio by Carl Guardino. He's CEO and president of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Also joining us by phone from Los Angeles tonight, Mary Hughes, a Democratic campaign consultant here in the Bay Area. Mary Hughes, good to have you as well.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be with you.
And also joining us, Luis DeCipio, chair of the Chicano Latino Studies Department at UC Irvine. Let me begin with you, Carl Guardino. There was a lot of talk at the beginning of this debate about the economy and jobs, and there was a debate about what's the best way to create jobs, as there often is in these political campaigns. What was your impression of that exchange and the sort of the two versions of California and how business-friendly it is?
Well, first, it was good to have that as the focus, because that certainly is the focus of 38 million Californians right now, with a 12.4% unemployment rate in California and 11.2% unemployment rate in Silicon Valley, which is doing better than the rest of the state, but is at almost all-time lows in terms of employment figures. And what was fascinating was to see both candidates focus on this issue and stay focused on it almost with every question that came out. Certainly Meg Whitman did that, but so did Jerry Brown as well. What was good to hear was some emphasis on the jobs being created in the innovation economy, why that's important, and to hear their different points of view about Proposition 23 and the enactment of AB 32. What was unfortunate, though, when you talk about jobs in the economy, is so many related issues that Californians care about weren't brought up in a question, and therefore there were no comments about it either. But if you poll almost anyone in the Bay Area, traffic is still a problem, which is related to the economy and jobs. Nothing on that. Housing and the affordability of housing is still a challenge. Nothing on that. Our infrastructure, water, et cetera, nothing on that. So an otherwise stellar performance by Tom Brokaw in asking serious policy questions rather than gotcha questions that you usually see in the debates, still nothing on a lot of issues related to jobs and the economy.
All right. And Mary Hughes, so what are your thoughts? What do you think each of these candidates accomplished tonight?
Well, I thought that the matchup was an interesting one tonight, and it seemed to me in the end it was science versus art. Meg Whitman relying heavily on facts, figures, repeatedly bringing up the idea that you have to have a plan, whether it's a plan for pensions, a plan for reforming the economy, plan and the specifics, but very heavy on the numbers, the way to get there, the 1, 2, 3 of the policies, whereas former Governor Brown relied on experience. Trust me. You know me. I'll get people in a room. We'll work it out. Very different approaches to the problem we have, and yet it is each in its own way necessary, but each chose to emphasize what they thought was most valuable to them.
And when you think about the voters who are at this point are maybe dissatisfied with the choices that they have in this race and maybe undecided, may not vote at all, do you think one or either, does either of those approaches appeal more to those undecided voters, do you think?
You know, I think that both address the issue of jobs, and for most voters, the issue of the economy and jobs is paramount, and I thought that the emphasis on that was appropriate tonight. I don't think either of them came. Interestingly enough, the word is repeated, but interestingly, neither put forward the ABCs of creating those specific jobs for California. A lot of discussion about how not to lose jobs, whether that's repealing AB 32 would help and we wouldn't lose jobs. But the notion of creating jobs didn't really get a lot of explanation.
Let me bring Louis DeCipio from UC Irvine into the conversation now. And Professor DeCipio, the issue of immigration came up, and there were several heated exchanges, and this issue also of the housekeeper, Nikki Diaz, that held a press conference a couple of weeks ago now. And I'm just wondering, how do Latino voters view that issue of the larger issue of immigration and this particular specific issue of this housekeeper? How is it playing out in that community?
Well, I think Governor Brown really hit the points, Attorney General Brown really hit the points that the Latino community would like to hear, though most of those would be admittedly out of his power as governor of the state of California.
Which points? What do you mean?
Well, support for some version of comprehensive immigration reform, temporary workers only if the temporary work status ends in a legal status at the end, as this bill proposed in the United States Senate in 2006 would have done. Those are federal issues, not state issues, and Attorney General Brown admitted that. But those are the issues that concern Latino communities. And the sort of federalism question of who has the power, the federal government versus the state government, is a subtlety that might not be heard so well by Latino voters.
And what about the issue of the housekeeper? Do you think Latino voters see that as kind of a distraction from the issues they care more about, like jobs and the economy and education, or is this something that could influence their vote in a big way?
Well, I think it will influence their vote and is a distraction in that Meg Whitman had made some inroads among Latinos in part because of her expenditure for advertising to get her name recognition up in the community. But as soon as they saw her response to the news about Nikki Diaz, that sort of tentative interest that might have been beginning to appear disappeared, and Attorney General Brown will benefit from that. Latinos will return to their traditional loyalty to the Democratic Party.
You're listening to a special statewide broadcast of the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer, and our guests this half hour, as we talk about tonight's debate in the governor's race, Louis DeCipio from UC Irvine, Mary Hughes, a campaign consultant, and also Carl Guardino from the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Let me play an excerpt from the debate tonight, and it was an exchange between Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown about what's wrong with Sacramento and what needs to be done to fix it. And my engineer is shaking her head, so tell me. we're going to hear an exchange on tax breaks, so let's listen to that.
Well, first of all, 82% of the benefit of this tax break will go to people making $500,000 a year, and there's not one guarantee they'll spend that money in California. And, Ms. Whitman, I'd like to ask you, how much money will you save if this tax break were in effect this year or last year?
So, you know what? I'm an investor, and investors will benefit from this, but so will job creators. And I was a job creator. And you know what? We have got to get someone in office who knows what the conditions are for small businesses to grow and thrive. My track record is creating jobs. My business is creating jobs. Your business is politics. You've been doing this for 40 years. And you have been part of the war on jobs in this state.
Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown talking about taxes and what's the best way to create jobs. Carl Guardino, how do business leaders view that kind of back and forth and that discussion about what's the best way to create jobs and tax cuts and capital gains? And do they see those kinds of questions as central to the question of how we're going to create jobs?
In Silicon Valley, it's a fascinating thing because yes, when you poll CEOs across the United States, not just CEOs in California, California is known as a state that is the most difficult in terms of a business climate, and we have to get serious about that in Sacramento if we're going to create jobs here and keep them here. At the same time, we also see other issues. We want to invest in education and infrastructure and other critical needs that face not only our companies but our employees. So it's more nuanced. But the point that Meg was making about taxes, fees, and regulations driving companies outside of California or not growing here is a very real one.
And you think that is contributing in a significant way to the unemployment rate? Or is it really bigger forces at work?
Yeah, the unemployment rate. That is a macro global issue that we're facing that we have to address. But does it contribute to it? Absolutely it does. But is it the only factor? No.
Okay. Louis DeCipio, or let me go to Mary Hughes. I'm wondering, you know, this is in some ways Meg Whitman's campaign is a historic one for women, and there's also Carly Fiorina running for the U.S. Senate. And yet women at this point seem to be, at least in the latest polls, fairly split down the middle between these two candidates. What are your thoughts about that and what each of them is doing or not doing to appeal to women voters?
Well, a couple things, Scott. I just wanted to comment. I thought the exchange that Carl just commented on was an interesting one. I think Governor Brown was very mindful that Californians have not been receptive to millionaire candidates for the most part, our current governor being an exception. But I thought that there was more strategy in that question designed to focus on that point. I think Meg has engenders pride. I think a lot of women feel proud that there are women CEOs who can do what the CEOs who have come before, who have sought to lateral into the governor's office from the private sector, that there is a woman in that line of succession, I think is important because visibility is important. Having said that, the gender gap in this country is largely based on the perception of women, particularly unmarried women of all ages, that when it comes to policies that look out for them and their families, the Democratic Party has been there, has been consistent. That's where they go. And over time, that gap has widened. So the fact that there is currently a standoff, although I think actually the most recent polls have a bit of a gap in the governor's favor, but I'm sorry, in Governor Brown's favor, but the fact that there is a split, I think goes to the issue of women feeling like they want to. They're drawn to support a woman who has both achieved as much as she has, but also who has the command that she demonstrated tonight of the facts and figures of government.
So maybe there's a bit of a conflict over whether that person really cares about people like me, even though it is a woman, but at the same time they're impressed?
That's correct. I think that there is often a sense that isn't it great that she's there? And by the way, I don't agree with her. And I think both of those things are present, and they're inconsistent, and I think that that does create some dissonance.
Yeah. I want to play an exchange between the two of them over that use of that word, whore, and it did come up. Brokaw raised it in a question, that recorded phone conversation that was picked up by a police union down in Los Angeles and then leaked to the L.A. Times. Let's hear a little bit of that exchange, and then I'll come back.
I don't agree with that comparison, number one. Number two, this is a five-week-old private conversation picked up on a cell phone with a garbled transmission, very hard to detect who it is. This is not I don't want to get into the term and how it's used, but I will say the campaign apologized promptly, and I affirm that apology tonight.
And I should have set that up at the beginning. What he was alluding to was a part of the question in Brokaw that the use of the word whore is as demeaning to women as use of the N-word is to African Americans, and he was denying that. But Mary Hughes, that this whole issue, is this a tempest in a teapot, or does this episode tell voters something important about these two people and how they've handled this issue?
Well, I thought it was an uncomfortable moment for everyone, and I thought that most viewers, I'm guessing, had a reaction, which is this is a case where a simple "I'm sorry" is appropriate. It doesn't matter whether the tape was grainy or the you couldn't tell who said what. If that was a word applied to an opponent, you say, "I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry." I thought that that was pretty straightforward, and I thought it was an uncomfortable moment, and I thought that it was curious to me. I'm not exactly sure why it was necessary to prolong that moment, quite honestly. I do think that it says a couple things. It says the level to which the public debate has dropped. It says so much about how our modern technology means that everything is visible and heard. And I think that for many campaigns, that would send a bit of a shockwave through your system if you are cognizant of that all the time.
Yeah.
But it is the world we live in today, and I expect candidates will adapt to that. I do not think that there is some great moral underpinning here. However, I do think people get agitated, people say things, and the right answer is that, you know,
shouldn't have happened. Let's
and
I apologize. Louis DeCipio. The role of unions came up a lot. Meg Whitman talking about the union bosses who are just waiting to cash in if Jerry Brown gets elected and becomes governor. How does that whole debate over unions play out in the Latino community? Do they see unions as, you know, corrupt and really in it for themselves, or do they see it more as part of the system that protects workers?
Latinos have become increasingly unionized over the last couple of decades, and particularly here in California. And if Governor Brown is going to do well among Latino voters, he really is relying on the unions to run the ground campaign that his campaign has failed to establish. So there isn't a fear in Latino communities, or particularly among Latino Democratic voters, about unions, and there's a respect for what unions provide, which are safety in jobs and protections and sort of the traditional role that unions played in the United States for other waves of immigrants.
But is it an issue, as they listen to these two candidates, is it an issue that really is an important dividing point for them and maybe a decisive one in terms of who they'll support?
No, I don't think so. The issues that drive Latino communities are education, jobs, immigration, and the unions are just sort of noise in that debate.
Yeah. Carl Guardino, one of the issues that came up was Proposition 23, which would suspend AB 32, the law limiting greenhouse gas emissions. And Meg Whitman used, I think, a rather nuanced approach to that question, and saying that she would freeze AB 32 and then fix it, as opposed to suspending it, which is what Prop 23 would do. How does, again, I hate to have you speak for all of Silicon Valley, but you are with the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. But how does that issue play out in the tech community?
Well, Scott, first, full disclosure, the Silicon Valley Leadership Group and its 325 member company CEOs, which isn't a lot of companies, but collectively that's nearly one of every three private sector jobs in Silicon Valley. And overwhelmingly, we oppose Prop 23. We supported AB 32 early and continue to do so. So your listeners should know that we do have that perspective. It was interesting on this question because they both clearly articulated their positions. And Meg certainly clearly articulated hers, though our membership disagrees with that. She did ask a question, though, that should be answered. And she said, what's wrong with taking a pause of a year or two? We're hearing she's even thinking. Well, if you believe the science of climate change, what's wrong with taking a pause is we can't wait. We need to move forward as a state, and we need to continue to be a thought leader nationally and internationally.
But even setting that aside, in terms of innovation and investment in the creation of green jobs, does suspending it, freezing it for a year or two, what difference does that make?
Well, when we talk to leading investors like Vinod Khosla and John Doerr, some of the leading venture capitalists in the world who are betting with their wallets, not just their words, this would have a devastating impact on the green economy in California and beyond because, as Meg and Jerry both said tonight, business needs certainty, and this would create a very uncertain climate to expect four quarters of 5.5% unemployment growth, which has only happened three times in 40 years. That's going to cause havoc.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Carl Guardino, CEO and President of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, thanks to you. Thanks also to Louis DeCipio from UC Irvine School of Social Services, Mary Hughes, campaign coordinator and consultant for many Democratic candidates here in California, and earlier Dan Schnur and John Myers at the debate. We'll have more coverage of tonight's debate tomorrow morning on the California Report on many of these public radio stations. You've been listening to a special broadcast of the California Report. Our director is Susie Rocho. The engineer is Seal Muller. Our technical staff includes Monte Carlos, Dan Manzer, Steve Pinch, and Larry Wood. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohen. The producer is Victoria Maleon. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995, and the members of KQED Public Radio.